are Locked On Big 12, your daily podcast on the Big 12 Conference, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody. Josh Neighbors here from Locked On Big 12 Podcast. On today's show, we have finally reached our Big 12 Conference football preview for the year 2021. This is part one. On today's show, in this order, we will preview Oklahoma with John Williams. I will preview Iowa State and Texas. And then we'll have Linda Godfrey of Locked On Pokes. We'll do Oklahoma State. And then Stephen Simcox of Locked On Horned Frogs. We will do TCU. So those five teams are up first. We're going in the order in which these teams were predicted to finish by the media in the preseason poll. Once again, it's not an exact science, but I thought it was the best way to do it. So you'll hear some great content from our hosts and from myself, yours truly, Josh Neighbors here. So I hope you guys enjoy today's preview special edition of Locked On Big 12. All right, this is Josh Neighbors here on the Locked On Big 12 official conference preview for the 2021 football season. We have to start with the team that was picked number one in the preseason poll, and John Williams, who is the host of Locked On Sooners. Traitors, John, a bunch of traitors you guys are, but no, pick number one. I think the biggest storyline is this team is great, but the season they're going to have in the Big 12 is going to be unlike any season that we've ever seen. Top dogs with a big target on their back, considering the recent news.
Yeah, it's a team that is going to be going into hostile environments everywhere they play, and they're going to have people really looking for them to lose every single week. But it's going to be a much more difficult task than people realize with an offense that is as good as any that Lincoln Riley's had and a defense that is definitely the best that Lincoln Riley's had.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the defense where you have to start, right? We go back to that 2019 Peach Bowl. I think it was Peach Bowl, whatever bowl it was, in Atlanta, right? And you go back and you watch, and Oklahoma's defense looked a lot different than it does now. Undermanned, you know, undersized against that LSU team. They have a legit top 25 defense this year. They showed it some last year. They lost a couple guys, but they bring back a whole lot. And that Alex Grinch group, that's the real focus, because that's what's going to push them over the top if they're going to win a title this year.
They're strong front to back. I mean, that defensive line is arguably one of the best that they've had in the last couple decades. You got Nick Bonito, who's a consensus All-American. You've got Perrion Winfrey and Jalen Redmond coming back. Jalen Redmond had 6.5 sacks 2 years ago, opted out last year. They didn't get that benefit. Got LaRon Stokes, who's also a big-time interior defensive line player. And then you got Isaiah Thomas, who broke onto the scene last year and was arguably one of their best players, a guy that can play inside and outside, but mostly is going to be rushing off the edge for Alex Grinch this year. And then the linebacker core is just as deep. I mean, they've got four or five guys that can log a lot of snaps. They're a veteran group. And then in your secondary, you're starting to get guys with playmaking ability. Woody Washington didn't really step onto the scene until the Texas game last year, but he's only just one of three players in FBS that didn't allow a touchdown, that logged something like 230 coverage snaps. Only him and two other guys didn't allow a touchdown. He had two interceptions. I mean, he was a big reason that Oklahoma's defense started to kind of take that next step, is because teams had a much harder time throwing on him. And then at safety, you know, you got two veteran guys in Deller and Turner Yale and Pat Fields. And then you got a guy that's an up-and-comer in Key Lawrence, who transferred in from Tennessee. And so front to back, they're just a really, really good group. They've got playmakers at every single level of the defense. And I think this is going to be the best version of Alex Grinch's defense that we've seen yet.
Yeah, and then on offense, you know, I'm not even going to go with Spencer Rattler, because here's the thing. Lincoln Riley's got three quarterbacks in the NFL. He's got three starting quarterbacks. He's got two Heismans. He's got one guy finished second. He's got two guys who are drafted number one overall, and one guy who's drafting, you know, the top two rounds. Spencer Rattler, you could argue, is probably the most talented in terms of the quarterback position itself. He is the most talented quarterback, period, I think, out of that group. There's no question. So I'm almost – like predisposed not to ask about the quarterbacks. I want to go to like wide receiver and offensive line. Yeah. Who's the best receiver? Because I've heard a whole lot of talk. For me, it's Marvin Mims. I don't think there's any conversation, but you might hear some people say, well, Jaden Hazelwood's a five-star kid. You know, he's got the pedigree, right? Theo Weiss came on at a certain point. Who is, and then Mario Williams as well, too, you know, a new guy coming in. Who is the best receiver out of this group?
Well, it's Marvin Mims right now, But I think this is a team and a wide receiver group where week to week, you could see a different guy leading them in catches, in yards. You look at a guy like Jaden Hazelwood, who's really struggled with injuries. I mean, he had the ACL last year that kept him out most of 2020, made some big catches for the Oklahoma Sooners, especially in that Iowa State game. Very athletic player, big body, good size. He's going to be a great asset for the Oklahoma Sooners to have in the red zone, especially. And I think he's going to be Spencer Rattler's best friend because if you watch last year's tape, Spencer Rattler didn't see a throw that he was unwilling to make. It didn't matter what the coverage was. He was going to let it loose. He's a gunslinger,
right?
And he's a gunslinger with a lot of talent. And so he's going to believe that any throw that he makes is going to get caught. And Jaden Hazelwood is the guy that is going to be making a lot of 50-50 catches for him this year. But then you also got a guy like Theo Weiss, who is a veteran player, really, really solid. You know, he had the most targets on the team last year, tied for the lead in receptions with Marvin Mims. And he's going to start on the outside as well. He's just one of those, like, we call him third down Theo. It's just he comes up with big catches on third downs. I mean, he's not flashy like Marvin Mims. He's not as athletic as Jaden Hazelwood, but he just makes the plays that are there to make, and he's solid. Like, you need a guy that is like him, that is solid and capable of making every play. Mario Williams, who we just mentioned, a true freshman, much like Marvin Mims last year, true freshman burst onto the scene. Mario Williams has that shot this year, making a ton of plays in fall camp, just highlight reel catches after highlight reel catches against a first team defense that we just talked about is going to be really, really good. But then there's a guy that transferred in from Arkansas this spring, didn't play in the spring game, actually played in Arkansas spring game, and then the next week transferred to Oklahoma. Mike Woods, this is a guy that averaged 18 yards per reception in the SEC last year, and he's getting slept on a little bit by most OU observers. I think this is going to be a guy that is going to figure very heavily into that wide receiver rotation with Jaden Hazelwood, with Theo Weiss. Marvin Mims is the guy. He's going to be the one that stands to benefit most with a full spring camp and a full fall camp that he didn't get last year to work with Spencer Rattler. Now coming in, going to get a full complement of snaps, which again, he didn't get last year. He was like fourth on the team in snaps at the wide receiver position. Now he's going to be a starter in the slot, and he's going to thrive, man. He's a great route runner. He makes great acrobatic catches, got great hands, able to make plays down the field. He's a dream. And he's a little bit different talented. He's kind of more like a Sterling Shepard or a D.D. Westbrook kind of a guy. You know, he's not as athletic or physical as CeeDee Lamb. He's not a burner like Marquise Brown, but he's a guy that does everything really, really well. And I think he's going to have a huge season for the Oklahoma Sooners. But then after that, I mean, they're four, five, maybe six wide receivers deep that you got guys that can make play. I mean, we didn't even talk about Drake Stoops, who
had
21 catches for the Sooners. And I think like 13 or 14 of them went for first downs last year. That's a huge, you know, conversion rate for a guy that didn't get a lot of snaps, but he's going to figure into the slot rotation. And again, someone that Spencer Rattler trusts very much to make plays down the field. And I love this wide receiver group. It's as deep as they've had under Lincoln Riley. It may not have the top tier talent like they did when they had CeeDee Lamb and Marquise Brown a few years back, but top to bottom, it's as deep as Lincoln Riley's had.
I've been asking, thinking about all these teams, the Big 12, and kind of saying when it's all said and done, where are they at? And it starts with Oklahoma because I'm asking the question. It's not just like, hey, at the end of the Big 12 season, where are you at? For them, it's at the second week of January. What is the end result, right? Where did things end up? Not just after the first 12 games, did you go to the Cheez-It Bowl or the Gator Bowl, whatever bowl it is you want to pick. For them, it's like, did you go to the playoff and did you win it? That is the expectation this year. So when things wrap up at the end of the year, when all things all said and done, we're putting a bow in the season, what do you think happens with this Oklahoma team? Do they reach the pinnacle? Do they get close and fall short? What do you think happens as we sit here now in late August?
Well, I think it's a team that is ready to make that next step into the national championship game of the college football playoff. If they don't make it out of the semifinal, it's going to be a disappointment. Mm-hmm. This is a team that has got a lot of expectations on them, got a quarterback who's coming back with a lot of expectations, a head coach that has yet to break through the semifinal round of the college football playoff. And it's his most complete team. And if he's not able to get this team past an Alabama or a Clemson or an Ohio State, presumably those are the three other premier teams in college football, even though they're turning over quarterbacks for each of them, it would be really disappointing if Lincoln Riley and the Sooners aren't able to make it to the championship game. Now, you get into a one-game playoff and anything can happen,
Right.
And I think most Oklahoma Sooners fans, at least reasonable ones, would understand that. But it would definitely be a disappointment if they're not, you know, standing there in the second weekend of January playing for a national championship. Now, if they win it, obviously that's all gravy, but I think they have to get through the semifinal this year. They just have to, because then the questions will never stop, especially with a move to the SEC on the horizon, especially if they lose to an SEC team.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. Do not, please, Lord, if they lose in the semifinal, do not let it be to an SEC team. It's like, I don't even care. It could be anybody else, but I don't want to spend 10 months or 8 months talking about Oklahoma moving to the SEC where they can't beat a team in a college football playoff. That would be miserable. But no, I think this team is as capable as it's ever been at winning a national championship. Again, excellent defense, great depth all the way around, great depth along, you know, at the wide receiver position. Running back position took a bit of a hit with news yesterday of Marcus Major being deemed academically ineligible. But still, at the top, you got Eric Gray and Kennedy Brooks, who are going to be fantastic runners for the Oklahoma Sooners. Both guys are going to get 1,000 scrimmage yards easily. And then you got a guy like Jeremiah Hall, who is a very underrated player. He makes a lot of plays in the passing game.
Man,
we love some fullbacks. Love that H-back position. We got to give him love. Yes. And I think Jeremiah Hall is going to be one of those guys that stands to benefit a lot with the absence of Marcus Major. But yeah, if they're not playing for the national championship come January, it'll be a huge disappointment, I think, for Oklahoma Sooners fans.
I'm with you. It's about making that game. And look, whatever happens, there happens. It's one game, but you have to make it. That's the step in the program they need, especially, like you said, heading to the SEC. John, what is coming up on the podcast? Where can people find it? Give us the lowdown. Give us all the info we need to find Locked On Sooners and all of your great work.
Yeah, so we're continuing to go through our positional breakdown. We talked about the wide receivers and the cornerbacks. We talked about the quarterbacks, and then the quarterback is the defense, the linebackers. Still got the offensive line and the defensive line to preview as well. And so we'll do that here in the next week over at Locked On Sooners. This week, I was fortunate to have Tyler McComas and Parker Thune from 1494.7. The Ref, it used to be called the Sports Talk. Now it's called the Ref, out of Norman, Oklahoma City, as we had a two-episode breakdown of the 2021 season. So make sure you go check that out at Locked On Sooners. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Sooners. And you can also read some of my work over at the Sooners Wire. So make sure you go check that out as well.
Thank you, John. We appreciate your time as always, my friend.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. And it's going to be a lot of fun this year in the Big 12. I'm sorry.
We'll be good. Don't worry. We'll progress, maybe. Quick pause for the cause on today's show. Today's Locked On Big 12 podcast is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Guys and girls, if you need something for your car, go to rockauto.com today. I'm telling you, they've got everything you need for your car or truck. They've got thousands of parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Why would you choose to spend up to 30, 50, or even 100% more for the same part at a chain store or a car dealership? For example, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump is $353 from a chain store. It's only $216 at rockauto.com. They've got everything you need, once again, for your car or your truck, daily driver or work vehicle. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box. That way they know we sent you. Amazing selection, always low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com.
All right, we keep rolling on with our conference previews. And so we've got two teams. I'm going to do solo here. We do not have a Texas Longhorns host at the moment. We do not have an Iowa State Cyclones host at the moment. And those two teams were 2-3 preseason in the media poll. We have Oklahoma first, obviously they were picked first. We've got Iowa State, then Texas, and then we'll roll on with TCU as well, and Oklahoma State coming up too. So those two coming up, and we'll do them in chronological order. But we've got Iowa State coming up next. And so a lot of you all know, if you follow this conference at all, Iowa State has built themselves to an incredible point. The fact they're top 10 in the AP poll to start off this season, they're picked number 2 in the conference, and they have a great opportunity this year because Iowa State has a legitimate chance to make the college ball playoff. Now, my biggest storyline heading into the season is, can they live up to the expectations? It's a program in Ames that has never been this high before, right? You think about teams kind of in that stature, right, from the Iowa State ilk. They usually don't have seasons like they had last year where they go to a New Year's Six Bowl and then come back the next year even stronger. That rarely happens for those kinds of programs. Well, Iowa State's doing that. They went to a New Year's Six Bowl. They won the New Year's Six Bowl. They're back this year, and they're better than they were last year. And so they've got the weight of expectations firmly on their shoulders. And that is the biggest storyline. And I think really we'll see that play out week two. They play Iowa the second week of the season at Jack Trey Stadium. They're at home in Ames. I'm so curious to see how that one plays out. That's a team that Iowa State has not beaten at home in a while. It's a team that Matt Campbell has never beat as the head coach at Iowa State. So he's got that to contend with as he looks forward, you know, to this season. But another big question for them, obviously, is Brock Purdy. I'm not as high on him as some other people are, and I think he took a step back. But I just think from an NFL perspective, I'm not as high on him as a lot of folks. I just think for him, it's about decision-making. You know, we saw bad decisions against Baylor, and that killed him in the first half. Then he came back, was lights out in the second half. We saw him with a resurgence against Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game, and then a bad decision ultimately ended Iowa State's rally in that contest. So can Brock Purdy be the guy that we all think he can become, you know, early on? And Matt Campbell has talked about that confidence that he played with when he was a freshman. Can he bring that back? Can he lead this team? We know they got a great running back in Breece Hall. They got a great wide receiver, great weapons in Xavier Hutchinson and Hutchinson, and also Charlie Kolar at tight end. But can they make it all click? Can they be firing on all cylinders and get the job done? I think the Oklahoma State game last year was a good example of them playing a great team and, you know, trying, falling short in the end, but at times having it all work. And then I think in the end of the season, the West Virginia game was the prime example of them making it all happen throughout the game. We saw moments, Oklahoma State, we saw what they're kind of, you know, capable of in that sense. And then later in the season against West Virginia, we really saw that full package on display for Iowa State. And that's really what they could bring to the table this season. We also saw it on full display when they shellacked Kansas State last year too. So I think Iowa State has got the makings of a great team this season. The question is, do they kind of feel that weight of the expectations upon them? And then the defense, everything except for Jaquan Bailey is essentially back. And can they deliver on a lot of the performances that they had last year? That's what fans will wonder. That's what the fans will be asking with that unique defense that everybody is now trying to copy. But obviously they had that rough start last year against Louisiana. They slipped up against Oklahoma State and then OU in the end of the day. But you think about those high moments, that second half against Baylor, that win against K-State, the win against West Virginia, the win against Oregon, a lot of those same guys. Can they repeat those results? That's the big question. A lot of teams are keen on Breece Hall. A lot of teams are going to be saying, make somebody else beat us. That's why I've been saying it's on Brock Purdy to do so. I'm not as high on Xavier Hutchinson as a lot of people, so I'm really curious to see how this wide receiver core develops. I hope he proves me wrong, because I want to see this Iowa State team take that next step the way that I think Oklahoma is going to take their next step. So with Iowa State this year, it's all about those expectations. When it's all said and done, if I had to give a prediction about how their season ends up, you know, I think they end up getting past Iowa. I really do. And that's the big question is, what does that unlock for them from a confidence standpoint? We don't know yet. But if I had to say this at the end of the year, I do think they fall short. I'm going to say that they go 11-2. I think they lose to OU once, at least once, and then they might lose to maybe a Texas or a West Virginia, right? I think they slip up. And maybe they beat Oklahoma that first time, but drop it to the championship game to them. So I think if we're going, hey, full 13-game picture, because I do think that they and Oklahoma make the Big 12 championship game. I do not think anybody else plays spoiler, but I do not think at the end of the day that they're good enough to make it all the way to the title and win that championship. I just think Oklahoma this year is a lot different than before. And look, I think these two teams are pretty close, but Oklahoma, when things are close, when experience is pretty close, I know OU is not as long as Iowa State is in just pure experience, but they've got the talent that I think wins out at the end of the day. I know it's a safe pick, but I'm going with Iowa State to just finish just short. They'll finish second in the conference as the season winds down, and they'll end up finishing second in the Big 12 championship game. Honestly, they could win the win the regular season title, then lose the championship. They could still find that 11-2 mark, even with that kind of performance. So we'll see what happens this year. But I've got Iowa State coming up just short, but still 11-2 year for Matt Campbell's group. You cannot scoff at that at all. All right, moving on now. Let's talk about the Texas Longhorns. There's always expectations when it comes down to Texas, but let's be fair to Steve Sarkisian with this matter. This is not his group. These are not his recruits. These are not his guys, as they say in the college football world. So I think the expectations should be taken off a bit for Texas. And I know they come in at number 21 in the preseason AP poll. I know they come in being picked third in the Big 12 conference by the media as we head into the season. But once again, this is a team that is going to have to deal with a really difficult schedule. ULL to start the season at home, 4:30 on Fox. That's a very experienced, very good ULL team. Then they go on the road against Arkansas at night. That's not an easy game either. And you're going up against a Barry Odom defense, had some success last year, had seen better offenses. Ostensibly, you think back last year, that Barry Odom group has seen better offenses. Guys like Matt Corral, they turned over six times, and they will see with this Hudson Card or Casey Thompson-led outfit that will come to Arkansas in that game, come to Fayetteville in that game. But, you know, after they get past that, let's just even say they go 2-0. They've got a stretch after they play Rice of Texas Tech at TCU, OU, Oklahoma State consecutively. And so that is a rough run of three games. Then finish out with at WVU and Kansas State. Those are two challenging games without a doubt. And so think about the multiple stretches of tough games. The fact that Steve Sarkisian has been laboring over the choice of who the quarterback should be, and it's been really tough on him. And maybe he's wrong. Maybe he's fronting publicly. But the choices have been difficult for him because also, remember, these are not his guys. This is not his quarterback. His quarterback, you know, no quarterback he has selected is there yet. So he is working with what he has been presented. And that's something we have to mention as we go forward in the season. I love the fact they brought Pete Kwiatkowski in this year and to be the defensive coordinator. They were able to poach him away from Texas. Great pedigree there, bringing in somebody like that. And that defense has a couple guys that, you know, definitely you got to look at. DeMarion Overshown, I think, will be an absolute monster for them this season. But yeah, this is a team that I think is good team, and people always overvalue them due to their talent. But if you ask me for that prediction in the end of the day, I think it's going to be an 8-4, maybe 9-3 team at best. But that's not an indictment at all on Steve Sarkisian. It shouldn't be, because this is his first season. Texas is not a very patient fan base. You've got to be patient, let Sark build as they head towards their future in the Southeastern Conference. All right, that will do it for these two. Let's move on now. We've got coming up Oklahoma State and then TCU on these conference previews. One more pause in the action on today's show. Today's Locked On Big 12 podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline.ag is the place to be, y'all, for everything football betting related. They've got online's biggest $500,000 mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL Survivor contest open right now. Head to the website, betonline.ag. Sign up today. It's free. And then receive your 100% welcome bonus. Be sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo. You make a bet on the Thursday, September 9th game between the Buccaneers and the Cowboys. If you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up. Use promo code NFL100. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports, from football to basketball, boxing, Formula One, whatever you want, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait and take advantage of all the great offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, they're your online sportsbook experts. All right, we're on to Oklahoma State for our season preview. Josh Neighbors here with Linda Godfrey of Locked On Pokes. Linda, this is the first time we've actually spoken, so it's really nice to have you. It's really nice to have a Oklahoma State podcast as well.
Yeah, I was excited. I like to collaborate, so I'm glad to be here.
Really interesting spot Oklahoma State's in. I'm going to ask you, what is the biggest storyline? To me, it is the fact that last year the expectations were through the roof and things got derailed, one, by COVID, but two, also performance. A little under the radar this year, what would you say is the biggest storyline for the Pokes heading into the 2021-2022 season?
I think it's got to be the defense. We have so many returners in the secondary that that defense should be absolutely shut down. And they played really well last year and still didn't get credit from national media because Big 12 is like known for that offense, not for their defense. So hopefully this season they finally catch the attention of some of the national media outlets, because I think it's going to be a fantastic defense.
And when it comes to Big 12, you know, we see Oklahoma, we see Iowa State, but really that third team is up for grabs. It's my opinion Oklahoma State is that third best team. How do you think they stack up against the Texas of the world, the TCUs, the West Virginia, those teams, kind of that second tier really vying for that third spot, if you will?
I'll tell you, my biggest concern is always Texas, just because they're, you know, they're always back or whatever, but they are a well-known school, and so a lot of eyes are always on that game. So that's usually one of my bigger concerns. Obviously, Iowa State's a lot better this year, but I feel like we match up pretty well. Again, our defense is so strong that I think they have a chance to shut down a lot of Big 12 offenses. So if they can pull that off, I would be very happy.
On the offensive side, they do have some weapons to replace. Tylan Wallace obviously is gone on the receiving side of things. They lose in the backfield Chuba Hubbard, and they also lose Tevin Jenkins on the line. And then the one big question, though, you know, even with that replacement, is the fact that Spencer Sanders really has not performed up to his potential. To me, Linda, I think he's an incredibly talented player who's got NFL-level gifts. He's just not been consistent enough, whether it be injury, whether it be performance. And Mike Gundy has been really shouting from the mountaintops this offseason about how Spencer has repped the, you know, as much as he could in fall or in the spring. He had a full spring, you know, finally, which is, he said he made more strides in the spring than he did, you know, during his entire career. What's your read on where Spencer Sanders is right now, and also where the offense will be compared to what we've seen in the past?
Well, like you said, replacing pieces like Tevin Jenkins and Tylan Wallace and Chuba Hubbard is daunting, but I really like the wide receiver room and our offensive line. They brought in some veteran guys, some graduate transfers, and they seem to be clicking really well. And I always say, like, about offensive lines, it's more about chemistry and how they work as a group or as a unit than they do individually. So you could have six of the best guys out there on the line, and it's not going to matter if they don't all work well together. Every report that I've read says that they're working really well together. So I'm very optimistic about the offensive line, which was definitely a sour point of last year. Like you said, Mike Gundy has been talking really highly about Spencer Sanders. So I hope that he has taken that leap. Obviously, he's that dual threat quarterback that's so exciting right now with the rushing upside, but he has some decision-making issues and some steps that he needed to take in the passing part of that dual threat. So I'm hopeful that he's made those steps. I think our running back room is going to be fine, but obviously getting rid of such huge pieces of the offense is concerning.
What's your prediction / expectation for Mike Gundy's team in 2021? What do you think the season ends? You know, what's their record and where do they finish in the Big 12 conference?
My expectations always first, because I'm into heartbreak, I guess. But but I really think that we have the potential. I know Iowa State's a fantastic team this year. Everybody's really high on them. But I think we have the potential to be the second best team in the Big 12. Obviously, the Sooners are stacked. It's grotesque. But I do like our chances of beating the Sooners this year, since it's in Stillwater. We're mad about them going to the SEC. All that kind of messy stuff, I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit more passion, and with passion comes harder hits to come of that Sooner game. But I think we have the potential to be the second best team in the Big 12.
All right, Linda, where can people find you? Where can they find the show? And tell us what's coming up and what can the fans look forward to?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Lindellians, and the show on Twitter is at @locked_on_pokes. And then as soon as we get off here, I'm going to do a Big 12 realignment update, which has been mostly, I've just been really dramatic about it. It's terrifying. But I've been checking in with some of the guys that have moved on to the NFL level and keeping an eye on any Oklahoma State battles in camp so far. So what are we, 10 days away from the season starting? We're getting close.
Yes, thank God. Thank God. Linda Godfrey, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. All right, one of those teams vying to be towards the top of the Big 12 is the TCU Horned Frogs. And joining us, our friend and yours, Stephen Simcox, to talk about those TCU Horned Frogs. Really interesting year because, Stephen, you and I talked, and I had said I'm between a few teams for being that number three team in the Big 12. And I told you I had a TCU week in me, but that week has faded. sell me on TCU. Why should TCU be considered the third best team in the Big 12? What's the best case scenario for the Horned Frogs going to 2021?
Well, first, Josh, thank you for putting me on video on YouTube. I mean, other than my failed attempt to be like Bo Burnham in high school, I think this is the first time I've been on YouTube. So I hope those old videos are scrubbed. But it's a interesting team. I think most years with the experience they have coming back, you would say, okay, this is the year for TCU. But because of Iowa State and other teams in the conference, Oklahoma State, it's a little more jumbled than you would think for a group like this. But Max Duggan has his flaws, but it's his third year starting. He has a full off season of work under his belt, got spring practice in, was the unquestioned starter through fall camp. They have some really good skill players, Zach Evans, Quentin Johnson on the outside. I think this receiving core, even though you're banking on some potential, could be really deep given some of the weapons they have. Tay Barber, J.D. Spielman, Savion Williams, and some others. And the defense, as typical with Gary Patterson, is solid. A really good secondary led by the corners and Travis Hodges-Tomlinson and Noah Daniels. A lot of experience there. And I feel like the defensive line, the linebackers, the front seven, will get better as the year goes on. Now, it's a tough schedule. You know, you're on the road in Ames, in Stillwater, in Norman. But I really think if they can take care of their business against the teams they should beat, which has been a problem at times for them the last few years, then this should be a group that when they play Iowa State late in November, if that game's not meaningful as far as at least making it to the Big 12 title game, then this has been a pretty big disappointment.
Yeah, it's a team that with their schedule, you know, they play Duquesne, Cal at home, SMU, and then Texas. All those are at home. Those first four are all at home. And there's a legit chance to go 4-0 there. I know it's hard, it's difficult and hard to see that path, but look, all four of those games are home games. Those are all teams that they can beat, they have beaten, but I'm really staring at Cal week two because that Justin Wilcox defense usually is very strong. And I think it's a great measuring stick. Where is this TCU offense at? Because they've had moments, but it's being able to put it together on the running game side, on the intermediate passing game side and the deep passing game side. And I'm not sure about you, but I feel like that week two game is a great chance to see where is the offense.
It's a good point. Cheez-It Bowl rematch from
it is. That's right. Yes, it is.
A 10-7 barn burner that went into overtime a few years back. Justin Wilcox is a great coach. And I do think if this passing game is better and it's improved, then you have to see can this O-line protect and can Max step up and make throws in the pocket to wide receivers that are able to get open. You know, that wasn't something that they were able to do last year really at all until the final couple games of the season. So I think the non-conference slate sets up pretty well. You get Duquesne, all right, take care of the SCS opponent, and then a good measuring stick against Cal for your offense and a good measuring stick against SMU for your defense, a team with Sonny Dykes that can score a lot, that's going to play with pace and tempo. But, no, I agree with you. I mean, if this – they don't have to be fully polished yet, but if they've made a jump on offense, it needs to show up against a very disciplined, fundamentally sound Cal team. And if it doesn't, then I think it's fair to start having some question marks about what their ceiling could be.
Yeah, Gary Patterson, too, a lot of questions, right? I mean, this is somebody who's getting up there in age, but also has still has a track record of putting guys in the NFL. and done it with regularity. The big question, though, really is on offense, right? It's all about Max Duggan here. And I just want to know, you know, from a just kind of 10,000-yard perspective, you know, you look at the season, where do you see it? If you zoom out and just say, all right, at the end of the year, what's their record? Where do they finish in the Big 12? Kind of those general questions. What do you, the host of Locked On Horned Frog, say that TCU ends up record-wise, and where do they finish in the Big 12?
I think 9-3 is where they're headed. And I'm not sure if that gets you third or fourth.
That's third. 9-3 in this conference, definitely third. In my opinion, that's third.
And, I mean, the non-conference games are tricky, but if you get past that, Texas at home, that's a team that they've had their number lately. You know, we'll see what Steve Sarkisian brings, but I think that's early enough in the season that you could get it done. I don't see them, Josh, you know, going to Norman and getting a victory over Oklahoma. Right. I think Ames late in the season is going to be very tough against Iowa State. And then Oklahoma State's a coin flip game. I'm expecting them to probably drop another one in conference. You know, West Virginia's given them fits over the years. Baylor is a rivalry game. That's at home. But I think even if they find a way to get a victory against Mike Gundy and Stillwater, they probably drop one against sort of the middle of the pack group. But I think 9-3 is a fair expectation. And with their schedule, it's tough because I feel like there's two games there on the road against the best two teams in the conference that you don't feel hopeful about. So that doesn't give you a lot of wiggle room. But if this is a group that is what they're hyped up to be, I feel like that's where they should be. And a lot of that does hinge on Max Duggan. Like, what does he do well outside of being able to make plays in the zone read game and make some plays off schedule? You know, can Doug Meacham and Jerry Kill figure out what it is that he excels in the passing game and free up that, you know, run game to where instead of on, you know, big plays, you have to run Max Duggan. It can be more of a luxury because you have more options within your offense.
Steven, where can people find you, the podcast, and tell us what's coming up on the show?
Well, on this handy graphic, I'm at Simcox Steven, which you see there. If you're listening, Simcox Steven is my Twitter handle. At Locked On TCU is the show handle, and Locked On Horned Frogs is anywhere and everywhere you get your podcast. I use Apple, but Spotify, Audacity, subscribe, and would love to have you on. It's been a fun few months with realignment talk, as I know you know very well, Josh. It does make for good content, though, even with the turbulence around the conference.
Steven, we appreciate your time, as always, my friend. All right, that will do it for part one of our preview. I want to thank our hosts, John Williams, Linda Godfrey, and Steven Simcox, for giving us some of their time. Part two of our preview will be up tomorrow on Friday, August 27th. It'll be all me, just Josh, on that one. We do not have hosts for the five remaining teams, so it'll be just me rounding us out there. But I hope you guys join us for that show as well. You can find this not only on YouTube, you can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you guys get your podcast. Until next time, my friends, as always, as we say on the show, stay safe.